Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 48 of Pepperdine People. I'm Jerry Rushford, professor of religion, and I'm joined today by Dr. Monty Cox from Harding University, who is here to speak at the William M. Green Distinguished Christian Scholar Lecture Program tonight. Monty, welcome back to Pepperdine.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Any idea how many times you've been to Pepperdine?
Only a handful. I would guess maybe four.
And you always feel welcome here.
I always feel welcome. Thanks to you.
Now, what are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm speaking at the William M. Green Lecture, as you said, talking about a Christian way of knowing.
Your title tonight is Through a Glass Dimly, Christian Knowing in a Pluralistic World.
Right.
What are the various connections between Harding University and Pepperdine University?
More than I know, I'm sure. Harding is a bit older by, what, a decade or two? We are 88 years old, and you are how old?
75. This is our 75th year.
But, of course, many, many people with Pepperdine connections have also blessed Harding over the years, from Carl Mitchell, who was one of my predecessors, to, well, many others I could name. But we have a strong connection.
And when you come here, who do you stay with? You have Harding friends at work at Pepperdine?
Gary Selby, one of my classmates at Harding, his wife Tammy. We were all there at Harding at the same time as undergrads. And lo and behold, 7 years ago, he winds up as a professor here. So I stay at the Selby Hilton when I come.
Were you there last night?
I was there last night. Sure was.
So who took you to breakfast this morning? Any other Harding people here?
One of my former students, Rich Little, now the minister for the University Church on campus. We went to breakfast together. Great guy.
Now, when you married your wife, Beth, in a very short time, you went off to Africa for about 9 years. Why does someone do that?
It was foolish. We should have stayed longer, been married longer before we went. But we did because we felt convicted. God wanted us to. We had a team of three other families that invited us to join them. So sight unseen, having never visited Africa before, we agreed to join the team. A year later, we went to rural Kenya, celebrated our second anniversary. We had a four-month-old when we left. So it was a foolhardy thing to do, but God was gracious and blessed the decade that we spent there.
How many congregations established in that?
Well, right now there are about 130 churches that are connected to our fellowship. When I left after 10 years, there were about 75. Really pleased that of those 130 or so, about a third of them have elders. Wow. And of course, some of them are weak and some of them are not so weak, but wonderful, wonderful and deep friendships that were formed in that decade.
How many baptisms into Christ did you participate in or witness during that decade?
Well, in that decade, there were about 3,000 altogether, and I probably witnessed a fourth of those altogether, but a lot. It was a thrilling time of new growth.
Now you've been back at Harding for a long time. How many years?
This is my 20th year at Harding.
And tell me about, you were the director of the Center for World Missions?
Center for World Missions, it's called.
What
it officially
that?
Took that name in 99. Before that, it was informally the Missions Department. But we became the Center for World Missions in 99, began to add staff. We have a staff of about a dozen people, including administrative assistants who our faculty represent the world. Altogether, we have had long-term experience in every continent. We teach the missions courses at Harding, and we also recruit and invest a lot of time in short-term programs and so on. I'm no longer directly responsible for it. I have new responsibility at Harding that began 6 years ago.
You're now the dean of the College of Bible and Religion? Is
right.
that it?
That's correct.
How large is that? What kind of degrees do you offer at Harding?
As of this morning, we offer 9 degrees. As of next week, we'll go to 5. We're undergoing a major curriculum revision, a re-envisioning of our program. We are eliminating undersubscribed degree programs. Beginning in the fall of 12, we will offer degrees called Bible and Ministry, Bible and Missions, Bible and Preaching, Bible and Family Ministry. We offer a second degree for students majoring primarily in something else, a second degree called Leadership and Ministry. It is a vocational ministry degree that was actually begun by Carl Mitchell, an old
He's a Pepperdine grad.
He is.
He was chairman of the Bible department here.
Yes, he was.
And my neighbor when I moved here.
Is that right? Well, he joined us after he left here and has been at Harding ever since. Just retired from his role as assistant to our president this year. This is his first fall without working full-time for Harding.
Now, Harding University is located about an hour or less north of Little Rock, Arkansas. Mm-hmm.
Correct.
On how big a campus?
I wish I could tell you how many acres. It's a big place and growing. We have...
How many students now?
An enrollment of, last count was 7,133, I believe.
For this fall?
That's right,
this fall. Is that the first time you've ever gone past 7,000?
First time we've gone past 7,000. I think last year we had 6,700. Now, much of that is because of growth in the graduate programs, and particularly in health science-related programs. We have a brand new physical therapy school that just started this fall. We're in our fourth year of the College of Pharmacy. We will graduate our first class at the end of this year. We have a PA program for training physician assistants. And College of Education has many, many graduates. Of that 7,100 students, 4,300 are undergrads. The rest are graduate students.
4,300. Mm-hmm. We have about 3,000 here.
Okay.
So would Harding be the largest student body among colleges affiliated with churches?
To my knowledge, it is now.
And Abilene would probably be second?
I would think so.
Yeah.
I would think so.
7,000 students. Now, last night you spoke to our students here in Stauffer Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about the Harding students you're with all the time and the Pepperdine students you've met here. What are the similarities between Arkansas and California?
Lots of differences between Arkansas and California. The students, I think, are quite similar. They come with similar questions. They come from probably more diverse backgrounds, the students that come to Pepperdine. The students I was with last night at this small chapel service were probably quite similar to the student body at Harding as well. Fine students committed to service, many of them with rigorous faith, courageous faith that inspires them to want to engage people in the developing world and do creative things in our own inner cities. And many of them want to do that in Jesus' name. It was invigorating. Really enjoyed interacting with those students last night.
Now, today you were in a luncheon. Who was in that? What were you doing today on our campus?
I was asked to meet today with the missions committee from the university church in town. They were just asking questions about what they do in missions.
And the paragraph that hit me in tonight's brochure says this, that you have a strong desire to recruit and train teams of missionaries in cities around the world and to expose students to ministry opportunities. And then this line hit me, that you are interested in fleshing out faithfully the Christian faith in a pluralistic world. Tell me what does that mean? What are you trying to achieve in your ministry there?
Well, obviously, the pluralism of our time presents a challenge, and that is, how can we represent the unique claims of Christ in a pluralistic world without watering down that message as if the story of Jesus is one story about one good man among many other good religious founders, without acquiescing to the notion that the story of Jesus points us in the direction of a good moral compass like many other good moral compasses. I mean, if we're going to be Christian, then we're going to represent claims that sound quite exclusive. Can we do that in a pluralistic world without being arrogant or mean-spirited, without being sectarian, but to do that faithfully? I think that's a real challenge. And the topic for this lecture tonight begins where I think we must begin, with the way of knowing, because after all, it is how we think we know what we think we know that drives everything else that's swirling around us in our culture. So that's what I'm trying to address tonight.
How often do you travel now? Are you still moving around the globe a lot, or do you stay put?
I'm on the go quite a lot.
Where have you been recently?
I lead what's called the Dean's Tour to Israel. I do that on a regular basis. I just got back a couple of months ago from taking, I think we had 54 in our group.
Are these undergraduates?
No, these are adults.
Oh, okay.
I usually do one group of a year of adults and one group a year of students. Usually those are study tours. So we tour Israel, and I have a very dear friend who is an Israeli archaeologist, not a believer in God, but he calls himself a lover of the Bible. The two of us tag team on those tours and really enjoy it. And then I take a group to Greece. I've done that for many, many years, usually a student group, sometimes an adult group. And at the end of that tour, a couple of weeks long, we'll either go to Turkey or go to Italy. The focus in all of the above is on biblical backgrounds in all those places. Yeah. I pursue that more as a hobby. My academic background is in the confluence of anthropology and theology, but my side interest is in biblical background, so thus these tours to the Holy Lands.
Well, I know you preach quite often, and you're coming back in May of next year here to Pepperdine to be one of the 7 keynote lecturers at our Bible lectures.
Thank you for the invitation.
That won't be the first time, will it?
This will be the third, I think. Is that right?
To speak in Firestone Fieldhouse?
I believe so.
That's right.
I think I was here in 2009 and 2007, so apparently you invite me every other year or every third
every
year.
Every third year.
But I've said yes when I could.
Well, we're honored to have you on campus again. We're looking forward to tonight when your lecture in the William Green Lecture Series. Do you have any connection with William Green? Did you ever know him?
No, I did not. I wish I had. Reading the biography, sounds like a very impressive fellow. But when this was first announced that I was coming for this event, his grandson, Lanny Tucker, one of my former students, in fact, an intern of mine in Kenya back when we still lived in Africa.
He was an intern in Kenya.
He was
just the grandson of William Green.
The grandson of William
Green. Well, I can see why we asked you to be the William Green lecturer.
You chose wisely. At least I have some small connection. And if his progeny is any indication, then he must have been a very fine man.
Yes, Lanny looks like his grandson. He's got
the
red hair. And there's a remarkable similarity between Lanny and William Green. Well, we're honored to have you back at Pepperdine, and come back whenever you can.
Thank you for having me.
And we look forward to the lecture tonight.
Thank you.